Hello and welcome along to the first Squawker Talker podcast of the 2022-23 Premier League season. Yes, we're back. Normal service is resumed and the delight of the beloved day job is back in business. On today's show, we're going to be taking the Premier League beast by the horns and making our bold predictions for six things we think, pray, hope, believe will happen during the Premier League season. So with that in mind, we're talking title race, top four, promotion shocks, relegation, the golden boot, playmaker and player of the season. And alongside that, we're going to have plenty of mini predictions thrown in as well as 22-23. God, that sounds strange. Shapes up to be an absolute cracker. So busy show to get through. So we're going to kick off straight away. My name's Fergal Brennan. And fresh from a summer of pool parties, Twitter arguments, and everything in between, we have Squawker's chief football writer, Mohamed Butt. Mo, has it been a hot girl summer? Has it been a Jack Grealish summer?
Summer's still going on, mate, because this is the thing. For you guys, you've had your break. I've got kids, so I'm in the middle of my summer now. School holidays, mate. School holidays just started. So I've got this weird situation where I'm going back to work with the Premier League and everything, and then now it's in there. But you know, the Euros, mate, it was a hot girl summer. The year it goes, won the Euros, they brought it home. Beautiful, fantastic.
Of course, yeah.
So, you know, that was great. The transfer market has been just hilarious. Watching Barcelona paddle Chelsea up and down the Premier League has been hilarious. And yet Chelsea still might end up getting some very healthy players. Well, we'll get more on them later. It's been a good summer. It's been a fun summer so far. He's hoping it only gets better from here. I mean, the Premier League is back, so it can only get better from here, right?
Indeed. Someone that might have actually had a couple of pool parties this summer, just back from stateside with the Gunners pre-season tour, we have Football London's correspondent Kaya Kainak. Any pool parties to report, Kaya?
No pool parties to report, unfortunately. No? Not to sound too Love Island, but it's been a summer I won't forget, that's for sure. It's been fun. Trip to the States is amazing. Lots of good stuff around Arsenal and, yeah, plenty of good times to be had.
Great stuff, as always, guys. And don't forget to check us out on socials at Squawker and the website squawker.com. We've got some brilliant content building up to the big kickoff this weekend. So don't forget to check all of that out. Right, we're going to kick off with the title race, Mo. And I'm going to go to you first on this because I'm going to take you back to last season. And you've made the big points quite a few times that this is Manchester City's era. Liverpool have challenged them, they've chased them, they've kept them honest, they've raised the overall bar. But Pep Guardiola gets his hands on the big trophy the majority of the time. And going into this season, Man City can clinch their first ever three-peat. That will be three Premier League titles. Manchester United, as you well know, are the only other club to do it in the Premier League era, 1998 through to 2001, and then 2006 through to 2009. And in reality, the complexion of what it takes to win a Premier League title has changed under Pep Guardiola. City have got all those important records as we go into the season. Record breaking and then equaling 32 wins, 90 plus points in three of Pep's title wins at City. And that's 2018, 2019, and then Liverpool matched them in 2020. But ultimately, the bar has been raised, the average has been raised, and we look like we're going to be in the same position again next season or this season as it is with Manchester City and Liverpool.
Yeah, it's this season now, baby. Season's here. Let's change our nomenclature.
I need to get used to that. Not next season, this season.
Look, City are amazing. Those three peats, right? Retaining the Premier League title is ridiculously hard. Right? Only two guys, three guys before Pep had shown up, only two guys have done it. That's Fergie and Mourinho. Mourinho did it once, Fergie did it a bunch of times. And then, obviously, since then, Pep has joined them in doing it. It's very hard to even just retain the Premier League title. To three-peat it, obviously, Fergie's done it twice. That first time was a really unique thing because, basically, if you look at the transfers in there, the only major transfers in between the three-peat seasons was him trying to replace Peter Schmeichel, right? First with Bosnich, then with Barthez. The three-peat was just riding that treble team out to the end of it, essentially, the end of the line. But in the 2000s, the latter repeat, the Rooney Ronaldo era, that three-peat, if you look at it, they did very little business before with assembling the team. They bought Carrick the season before the title start, the title win, and then after that first title win, they did loads of business. Anderson, Nani, bought in a whole bunch of players, Owen Hargreaves, Tevez, and that's where the bulk of their business. They didn't really do much business between the second and third title win, right? City, on the other hand, are just constantly evolving. Constantly, they've been constantly changing stuff. After that The first season, they got rid of Aguero. This season, they got rid of Fernandinho. So they're shedding their older players. They're rejuvenating, revitalizing the squad, bringing players in. Jack Grealish was last year's big acquisition. They tried to get Harry Kane as well. Obviously, didn't quite work out. Grealish is obviously a work in progress. Not very good in the Community Shield, not going to lie. But the season is long, and we'll see how he develops, right? Phil Foden's been coming on stronger than ever. This is his three-peat almost, watching him develop from being on the fringes of it. He technically won those other two titles as well, but he was barely involved. Now he's going from coming on the fringes to now being a first-team regular, being maybe one of their best players. And, you know, you look at it, and it's just, I can't get over that. They've signed Erling Haaland, whatever you want to say his name. One of the best strikers in the world, phenomenal striker. So look, Liverpool are going to keep pushing them, right? Liverpool are the Arsenal in this situation. They play beautiful football. Well, you know, sometimes. And they're great fun to watch and everyone loves them because they don't win too much. You know, it's easy to love someone that doesn't win too much. When you win loads, people get kind of sick of you. So no, everyone has fond memories of that Arsenal team because they won a title, won a double, won another double, went invincible. It was all great, but they never hung around. They never retained a title. So no one got sick of them. It was like, they can remember, yeah, remember the Invincibles? They were class, right? Do you remember that double team, Henry, Sol Campbell in that team? That was a class. You can remember them fondly without thinking, oh God, they won it 3 years in a row. No one got sick of them. Same thing, Liverpool. Everyone loves Liverpool. Everyone loves Liverpool anyway, right? As a like default rule. And then you throw Jurgen Klopp in there. I mean, everyone loves Jurgen Klopp. Who doesn't? Don't lie and say you do. I know you do. Everyone, even Man United fans, they secretly wish he was managing Man United. Don't tell me you don't love Jurgen Klopp. So everyone loves Liverpool, right? They're a very lovable team. They don't like Liverpool winning things necessarily because, you know, fan animosity and stuff. But they love the club. City are just different class. They are the big bullies, right? And I'll tell you what as well. They're coming for it this season. They're going to get better and better. You talked about Graham to go back to 2018-19 levels with the big arms race, title race. I agree. I'll tell you what. I predict Man City are going to break 100 points this season. They got the 100 points back in 2017-18. They got 99, 2018-19. They got 92, 93 last season. They're going to break 100 points this year. They're going to have to. And if you look at their seasons, the 100-point, 99-point seasons, they had four draws and two defeats that first time, and they had four losses and two draws the second time. So there's wiggle room. They can improve on that. They can absolutely improve on that record, right? So I think they will. I think powered by Erling Haaland, powered by the movement of the squad going forward by arrival of Calvin Phillips, giving them a genuine option to rest or rotate Rodri, play 4-2-3-1. I think they're going to have a really good season. And I think Liverpool will push them all the way in classic Liverpool fashion. And this is not like a hard prediction. Like, I do predict Manchester City will break 100 points this Premier League season and retain the Premier League title, do the three-peat. I kind of also think Liverpool might break 100 points too and not win the title, which would just be hilarious and so very Liverpool. Because Liverpool are a fantastic side as well. I'm not taking anything away from them. They're really good. They will go down in history as the greatest losers in Premier League history, without a shadow of a doubt. They're a phenomenal side. But, you know, getting over this Man City team is just, it's too big of a hurdle for me, man. Guardiola, like, you look, they played terribly against City and Liverpool in the Community Shield. They still created three golden chances for Haaland, missed three further golden chances for Haaland. They could have absolutely walloped Liverpool in that game and they didn't even play well. The potential for that team, now that guy's in that team, is just staggeringly high. Liverpool are great. City are something else entirely. City going to win the title, 100 points, nailed on.
Kai, I want to ask you about this idea of the bar being raised, because the changing dynamics of the title race, and as Mo said, there is the possibility that we could see both teams breaking 90 points, 95, maybe even 100 as Mo is predicting, but 30 wins is the absolute basic to win a Premier League title now. We've seen that it's probably needed 32, that could rise to 34, 35 this season. Do you see that the way it's going, that it's just going to be toe-to-toe, City, Liverpool? We loved it last season because that was the case all the way until the final weekend. Do you think we're going to follow that pattern and maybe see even more records either equaled or broken?
I think so. I think the consistency of these two teams is what makes them so great. I think that's why these two teams will be viewed as probably among the best we've ever seen in the Premier League. They're just relentless in their pursuit of victory and trying to win these titles. And it's unbelievable. In any other era, as Mo was saying, Liverpool would have won so many Premier League titles with this current set of players they've got right now. But they just happen to be really unfortunate in the sense that Pep Guardiola decided to turn up in 2016-17. And it's been pretty much a struggle for the Premier League ever since. The one variable which could affect consistency is the mid-season World Cup. We don't quite know what impact that could have on everything. Will there be injuries? Will there be fatigue? We don't know, you know, which players will be in the tournament longer than others, all that kind of thing. So that's just one variable that could affect whether we'll see 34 wins. I mean, as crazy as that sounds, this season, that would be my only thing I'd add to it. But yeah, I think that's the level of consistency these two sides are striving towards for sure.
On the thing on the World Cup, real quick, on the World Cup, that's why City and Liverpool are going to win by so much, by the way. Their best players aren't going to the World Cup. Erling Haaland and Mohamed Salah are not going to the World Cup. They're going to have 2 months or 6 weeks of rest. Everyone else is going to be exhausted mentally and physically. Those two aren't. They're going to be fine. That's why City and Liverpool are going to do 100 points this year. They're going to come back fresh. Everyone's going to be like, oh God, I'm so tired. They're just going to... Imagine Haaland running at you after you just spent 6 weeks in Qatar running around like mad. You just fall over and you'd have a heat stroke, wouldn't you? You'd be like, forget it. I'm quitting. I'm retiring. Imagine Salah dribbling at you and you're tired. I haven't played a World Cup. I'd just go home, man. I'd go have a nap.
It's a worrying look into the future of potential climate change that a Premier League player in December could get heatstroke mode. But we're not a weather podcast. We're not going to get into that. But we are going to move on and we're going to go slightly down the table to the top four race and Arsenal. Kaya, your stomping ground. You're our inside man on Arsenal. You've been away with them on pre-season tour in the United States this summer. But the big news that I and any other Arsenal fan know absolutely is that Arsenal have not finished inside the top four since 2016. That's six seasons with no top four finish. Average points 65.6. 71 has been the average to get into the top four during that period. On the face of it, the gap looks small and it looks very straightforward. Win a few more games and you're there. But that isn't the case. We know that isn't the case, be it for Arsenal and be it for anybody, because just like the title race, the top four average points has raised in the last few seasons. Regardless of the rivals' performance, Arsenal needed to react. They haven't so far. Some really sensible business over the summer. £118 million spent. We're going to touch on some of the rivals in just a minute, but Arsenal fans will be looking at this, the players that have come in, how close they were last season, and asking the question, can they do it in 2023?
Yeah, the plan was to be in and around the top four race, ideally finishing inside the top four race this season. If they'd come top four last season, people at the club have admitted that would have been ahead of schedule. I don't think anyone was expecting it, and I think it kind of opened up for them with how poor Manchester United were, how poor a start Spurs had, and you know, I think that opened up that fourth spot in a way that I don't think anyone was realistically expecting. So this season is when Arsenal have sort of put aside for them to get themselves into the top four. That's what they're targeting, and if you look at the business they've done, it's clear that that's the aim. They have made some really smart signings. They've addressed areas of the squad that were weak before. If you look at the centre-forward position, they've gone from someone who was, I'll put it politely by saying, immobile in Alex Lacazette, to having someone who is now,
be nice,
you know, running the channels.
That was nice. Immobile was being nice.
I'm sorry, I actually quite like Lacazette. Was actually a really good servant to Arsenal, so I don't want to be too critical of him. But he had limitations that Gabriel Jesus has immediately fixed. And I think Arsenal's frontline this preseason, and I know it's preseason, all those caveats, and Sevilla looked very unfit, as did Chelsea, but those 4-0 and 6-0 victories, when you saw that front line of Saka, Martinelli and Jesus up front, just interchanging, not really having one fixed position, that has been so exciting. And I think Arsenal are a lot more of a dangerous prospect. Further back the pitch, they've solved some issues of depth. So William Saliba coming in from his loan spell at Marseille means that defence now has a bit of depth, whereas last season, if they got one injury to a key player, as we saw with the likes of Tomiyasu and Kieran Tierney, they were in big trouble. Now they've got someone like Zinchenko as well who's come in. So they've got that squad depth, which they needed. And yeah, the business has been smart. Players like Fabio Vieira are still going to try and contribute as well. So it's looking good for Arsenal in this race to the top four. I'm reticent to call them favourites just now before we've seen a Premier League match. But I would say, based on the business they've done and how they've looked in pre-season, I think you'd probably make them favourites to finish inside those top four places.
Yeah, I think Arsenal have done really smart business. I love every acquisitions have been really good. Jesus and Zinchenko know Arteta. They're friends with Arteta. They've obviously worked with him before. They won titles with him before. They know what it takes to win titles. Jesus in particular is dramatically underrated because, frankly, he's not Sergio Aguero. So people really have underestimated how well he scores goals and how important he can be. Yeah, he's not Sergio Aguero, but literally no one is. So calm down. He's going to do really well for Arsenal. I think it's genuinely, I don't want to put a number on it, but
well, hold on, because I'm gonna throw this across to Kaya and ask him, because I, as an Arsenal fan, I hope that the phone is ringing off the hook for Gabriel Jesus this season, because he's been sensational in pre-season. You've mentioned the record that he comes from Manchester City with. We all as Arsenal fans want him to absolutely hit the ground running and the phone just be constantly in his hand. And he's got a little subplot going into this season, because Brazilian players have not scored as many goals as other nationalities. He himself is joint best for a Brazilian player in a Premier League season. That was in 1920. He got 14. That mirrored Robinho from 2008-2009. Roberto Firmino is the current top Brazilian dog back in 17-18, where he got 15. How is it going to go for Jesus this season? Is the phone just going to be ring, 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 ring?
Yeah, I think the signal is going to be strong at the Emirates. I think we're going to see full bars, Gabriel Jesus. I think, you know, 15 does feel like a lot, but he's already got, I think, what is it, six in seven games in pre-season. I know it's pre-season, caveats and all that kind of stuff, but the way Arsenal play, it really does suit him. And he obviously comes in saying he's not going to be the main man, but the amount of chances Arsenal create with that attacking, sort of young, attacking, exciting, creative front line, it's going to be, you know, his dream, really. And he's coming into this.
Is he on pens?
No, it'll be Saka on penalties.
Okay, because if Saka gives him pens, it's 20 goals. It's 20 goals if Saka gives him pens. Honestly, he's a perfect fit for what Arsenal need, because he's just, like, you know, I know I said it earlier, but I chastised you earlier, but he's basically Lacazette that can move. And like, if you look at Lacazette, what Lacazette's big issue was, he was a great finisher, great technique, great passer, but he couldn't run, right? He couldn't move the channels, like, because he's an older player, he's run himself. Jesus can do all of that, and Jesus has won titles recently, big title winning experience. I like him a lot. But look, to move on from Arsenal, right? Because it's not just Arsenal. Arsenal are good, though. I'm just worried about their midfield. Looks a little bit light, right? Their defense, I mean, not having to play Cedric is going to be huge. You know, so Saliba comes in, Ben White plays right back. That's going to be massive for them, because Cedric is rubbish and everyone picks on him. So well done. And then obviously up front, just everything is great up front. I love the numbering as well. Shout out for the shirt numbers, by the way. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 as well. Beautiful. Absolutely spectacular. I want Arsenal to win, to get top four based on that alone. Fantastic. But midfield is a bit light. But to the other teams, right? Chelsea have spent all summer getting the stuffing sapped out of my Barcelona, getting beat to every single target they had. And they only got Koulibaly because Barcelona, now we want to get Koundé instead. So it's like, it's a bit embarrassing. But they did get Koulibaly. And he's like the manliest man that ever manned. And he's a fantastic leader. And he's a mobile defender. And he basically means that they can rest Thiago Silva, or I bench Thiago Silva, and not have to worry about lacking leadership and organisation at the back. He can give you that. You can now play him, Trevor Chalobah, and someone else. I don't know who. And yeah, they're looking for a third defender. And you won't have to worry about, oh, there's no leadership at the back. He's a phenomenal defender. And they've got Raheem Sterling, who is, like, look, he's not world class, like absolutely one of the best players in the world, but he's that next bracket, and he's really consistent. And back in London, comfortable with near his family, he could explode. He could have a very good season. He's going to pop up for all them tap-ins. He's basically Timo Werner, but he's not rubbish, like Timo Werner. And I just think, you know, Chelsea are really, really good. And if they can get Frankie de Jong and Mark Cucurella, like they're saying they might do now. I mean, Frankie de Jong is one of the best midfielders in the world. He's not fitting in at Barcelona, but like, let's not sleep on how good this guy is. And you put him in that Chelsea 3-5-2. Oh my God, get out of the way. That's going to be terrifying. That's him and Kovacic in the middle, or him and Kante. Forget about it. That's terrifying if Chelsea can get that done. And Cucurella, we know he's an absolute demon. Left centre back, left wing back, whatever you need. He's actually one of those one players who's not really like technically amazing, outstanding, but he works so hard. He's got such a killer attitude that he'll be, and he's got such great physical attributes. I think he'd be a fantastic signing for them. So Chelsea are a tricky one. I don't like the look of their team as much as I like the look of Arsenal's, because I think Arsenal's is more ready-made to succeed as long as their midfielders stay fit. Whereas with Chelsea's, you need Havertz to have a good season. You need Sterling to settle in straight away. It needs to, you know, really hit the ground running. A lot of things are unknown still, but potentially, Chelsea could have a monster team if they can get Frankie and Correa over the line. Then it's just Spurs. I mean,
Mo, I want to ask you on Spurs, because Antonio Conte's got a very interesting and brilliant record if you're looking at this from the perspective of a Spurs fan. He's never failed to win a trophy after spending more than one season at a club. They've spent big this summer. They brought in Richarlison, Jed Spence, Longley, Bissouma, Forster and even Perisic from his old team into Milan. There'll be a focus on them in terms of the top four race. But Spurs fans do want a trophy. It's going all the way back to Juan de Ramos, the last time they got their hands on a trophy. So strangely, they will be focused on getting into the top four, as they did at the back end of last season. But can Conte break the trophy duck for Spurs and also continue his record of making sure that it's not a second dry season?
Yeah, and I was about to say, I predict that Spurs will finish third in the Premier League and Conte will break his trophy, will continue his trophy streak, and they'll break the trophy down. I think they'll win one of the cups. I think, not in Europe, don't get me wrong, Conte sucks in Europe, one of the domestic cups. They're such a good team, Spurs, right? They were last season. You could see it immediately when they added Conte, because, you know, that team has a lot of great building blocks in there. Mourinho did a lot of really good work, even though he couldn't get out of his own way of being Mourinho. He did a lot of good work in building the defence and setting the stage. Conte then took it on. He's turned Dier into a very useful defender again. I mean, because we all remember Dier was an amazing prospect and then sort of plateaued as a weird, like, not a very good midfielder. Putting him back in defence has really brought him along. You know, everyone's coming along. Of course, Conte can turn anyone into a wing back. So, you know, you can be a wing back. Sure, why not? You know, so he can do anything to anyone. And now they've actually got him Perisic and Jed Spence. Like, that's really, those are really good players. Different ages, obviously, but really good players out wide. Richarlison is just perfect for Conte because he's such a jerk, but he's such a good footballer as well. And that's exactly honestly, that's exactly what Spurs need. You need a bit of needle. Son loves to stick an elbow in, but he's not a fighter. He's too nice of a guy. He has a bit of a nasty streak to him, but he's a nice guy. Ultimately, he's not going to fight anybody. He might accidentally or instinctively do something, but then he won't fight anybody, right? And Kane isn't going to fight anybody. Come on, let's be honest, right? So what, is it Kulusevski, your hard man up front? You need some up there to get involved, right? And you saw the beef, right, with Son and Montiel in preseason, right? Who are the first two guys over there? Richarlison and Romero. They got in there straight away. They want the fight. They want the beef. Having those guys like that is important for a team like Conte because Conte's teams pound the edge, right? And they're very physical and in your face. So, yeah, I think Spurs are going to finish third. And just a quick shout out on Man United, who have somehow managed to sign three really good players, really, really good players, three excellent signings, and yet not address any of their three needs, the biggest needs. No right back, no defensive midfielder, no striker, which honestly is quite impressive that you've signed three brilliant players, improved your squad for sure, and yet you have not addressed any of your three areas of need. Look, man, if they can finish above any of the other top six, I'll be impressed. I think sixth is in the cards for Man United again. I think they'll improve. They'll play better football, but without a defensive mid, without a striker, you know, come on, what are you doing? Like, you can muddle through with right back, but without those other two, what are you doing? Like, yeah, Spurs third though. Conte, serious business.
United fans will be hoping that it's not Mystic Mo once again this season. But, you know, given your record on getting these predictions right, I think, you know, you can breathe easy for now if you're a Manchester United fan. Right, we're going to move on and we are going to whiz down to the bottom of the table and the relegation picture, Kaya. And instead of the age-old debate of which of the promoted sides are going to go straight back down, we're going to try and be a bit positive. And Nottingham Forest are the ones that we're focusing on because they're back in the Premier League, first time since 1999. And everybody loves a promotion fairy tale. We love falling in love with a promoted side, doing well, back in the Premier League, or even in their first Premier League season. 2019 with Chris Wilder, Sheffield United. 2020, 2021, Marcelo Bielsa and Leeds. And then last season, Thomas Frank and Brentford. Records-wise, you've got to go all the way back to 2001 with Marcus Stewart and Ipswich Town getting into the European spots. So there is scope for a bit of a fairy tale and a big story, but Forest have spent a lot of money. They've spent £73 million. They've brought in 13 new players. And last season, so much of what was good about them was built on loan players. Garner, Zinchenko, and Jed Spence, they've all gone. Omer Richards has come in. Dean Henderson, who's very annoyed with Manchester United, has come in. Taiwo Awoniyi has come in from the Bundesliga. Really impressive goal record and an XG record from the Bundesliga last season. It was only Modest, Lewandowski, and Haaland who were better than him in terms of XG inside 90 minutes. There's lots to be excited about with Notts Forest. Can that be translated into the cold, hard reality of the Premier League?
I think it can. I think Forest are a team capable of doing a Sheffield United, if you like, in the sense that they'll come up and they've got a very clearly defined style of play and a very clear way that they want to play under Steve Cooper. Whereas you look at other teams that are coming up, Bournemouth have a style of play, but I'm not really sure I've seen too much of them in the transfer window to suggest that they're going to cause too many problems in the Premier League. Fulham, we never really know what you're going to get from Fulham. Whereas I know Forest have brought in tons of players, and that's obviously going to be difficult to embed all those players into the squad. But it's very clear what they want to do. They want to sort of cause problems. They want to play with that back three, and I think it's going to cause a lot of issues for teams in the Premier League. I think, you know, they're going to surprise a few people. I don't think they're going to be an easy team. They, of the three, I'd definitely back them to stay up the most. I think they can definitely cause some problems. I look at the signings they made. I know, you know, the likes of Jesse Lingard have got a lot of criticism for going to Forest, but I think that's a fantastic move for him. I think if he can get himself starting, get himself scoring, he's got a really good chance of going to the World Cup squad. They've got players with a point to prove. You look at someone like a Nico Williams, who's not quite made it at Liverpool. Will he, you know, will he do well at Forest? Will he be able to prove himself as a Premier League right back? Someone like an Omar Richards as well, who you mentioned there, didn't quite cut it at Bayern. Can he do it in the Premier League? That's a question to be mentioned there. Plenty of others. Dean Henderson is another who definitely has a point to prove with some of the statements he's been making. I don't know if he was well advised on making those statements, but he certainly put the pressure on himself this season. So he's kind of got to deliver now. And I think, you know, if you're looking at sort of like low-key signings of the season, Aurel Mangala is a fantastic player and I think a really good addition to that midfield, in the sense that he'll just be able to do the box-to-box role in the little double pivot in front of the defence. And I think he'll be a really shrewd signing. I think if you look at the business, I know they've done a lot, but it's not a scattergun approach. I think, again, going back to Fulham a few years ago when they came up, they signed something similar to 13 players, but you never really were sure what the plan was. Steve Cooper seems to have a clear plan, and I think that's going to do for us very well this season.
We are going to make a couple of predictions on this. I mentioned, obviously, at the start of this little section that we're not going to pound on the promoted sides that have come up, Mo, but ultimately, we do want to look at into the crystal ball and this time next year or May next year and who is going to be in the relegation battle. There's going to be established Premier League sides that will slip down. So, quick fire for yourself and then for Kaya. Who are your picks to be relegated from the Premier League this season?
Bournemouth are going back down because they just are. They're going back down. That squad is not good enough and they haven't signed anyone good enough. Fulham are going to go down because Mitrovic doesn't score goals in the Premier League. He's been in the league like five times now. He doesn't do it. I don't know why. He scores great goals international level. He scores great goals championship. But Premier League, he can't seem to handle it. I don't know what's going to happen. That's not going to change. And without him scoring goals, what are they going to do? Nothing. They're going to go back down. And I think Wolves are going to join them. Wolves were rubbish last year. And Jose Sarr had like the most ridiculous season in the world. We went like 9.8 goals against them. He's not going to do that again. So Wolves are going to go down. I don't want them to. I think they're quite interesting, really. It's nice having Wolves around. And Nathan Collins is a very good player. But they're going to go down.
Okay, Kaya, give us your three to go down or potentially go down.
Yeah, I'm going to go for Bournemouth as well for the reasons Mo outlined. I won't repeat all of them. I think Leeds could be a contender to go down. I think, you know, I know they spent a lot of money this summer, but you know, they've got a coach who has some question marks hanging over his head. I think the fans are still undecided over Jesse Marsh, probably a polite way to put it. And, you know, a lot of their signings don't really have too much Premier League experience, so they could be an interesting one to keep an eye out on. And then my third team is Everton. I saw them in pre-season against Arsenal and they were atrocious. They've not done any business that makes me think they're going to improve at all from last season. And I think they were very lucky.
But they have Yerry Mina. But they have.
I know you love Yerry Mina, and I know, you know. Greatest. You have to bear in mind though that Yerry,
he doesn't. He can't, unless, hold on, Mo. Unless Yerry Mina starts playing up front, that's not going to change.
He'll also be injured for most of the season.
I'll tell you what, Everton are going to survive because they're going to sack Frank Lampard before Christmas.
Yeah, well, that might be their best.
And make Yerry Mina manager.
Yeah, that was my next point. Well, I don't think Frank Lampard is someone who can lead a Premier League team away from relegation trouble consistently.
He's not cut out for that battle at all. Like you said, they've sold Richard, not replaced him. Calvert-Lewin is now injured, I think. So, yeah, no, look, they're going to be rubbish, but they'll sack Lampard. They'll be so bad, they'll sack Lampard and they'll get someone who can actually save them and then they'll get saved. That's why I think Everton will be so bad, like they'll act and they'll save themselves. Whereas the other clubs, I don't think they'll try and muddy along and then it won't be good enough and the squads aren't good enough anyway. Like, there's still talent in that Everton team. It's just, he's not very good at using it. Sorry, Frank.
Indeed. Alexander Mitrovic, Mo, you're tipping to struggle to score goals. So we're going to move on to a subject that hopefully should be full of goals in the Premier League season, and that is who will win the Premier League Golden Boot. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is the last player to win the Golden Boot in their first full, obviously he had a half season at Arsenal, first full Premier League season in 18-19. He bagged 22 Premier League goals. Haaland, Nunez coming in. They're trying to take Salah's crown off him. So I'm just going to rattle through a few stats here, Mo, before we get stuck into predictions. And Salah really is the benchmark for any new striker or returning striker, as he was coming into the Premier League. First Liverpool season, for new strikers looking at this, this is so impressive. 32 Premier League goals in 2017-18, 26 league goals for Nunez at Benfica last season. Haaland has got 22 and 27 in his last two campaigns at Dortmund. There's lots to dig around in this. One of the things I'm really interested about is overseas players scoring 20-plus goals in their debut Premier League season. Diego Costa and Jurgen Klinsmann managed 20 exactly, Aguero 23 in 11-12, Ruud van Nistelrooy in 2001-2002. And then top of the shop, ironically, who Nunez could be trying to trace down, is Fernando Torres, 24 Premier League goals for Torres in 2007-2008. Can Nunez do it?
Absolutely. Like, look, Darwin Nunez will score, but I predict Darwin Nunez will score between 25 and 30 Premier League goals, maybe even 32, 31, 32. You have to look at, right, what people don't understand about Darwin, right, is like most true nines, he has a real eye for weakness, right? Genuinely, like 10 of his goals last season in the Premier League came against two teams. In four games against two teams, right, against weak teams. He's very good at sensing weakness and just pouncing on them. He may not impact. I mean, he impacted a big game at the Community Shield. He may not do that, right? He may not be the big guy. Maybe it'll be Salah, maybe whatever. But he's got that ruthlessness. Like, the reason Messi and Ronaldo post as absurd goal-scoring totals, the reason Lewandowski post as absurd goal-scoring totals isn't because he does it in the big games. I mean, he does do it in the big games, but because they did it against the small teams week after week after week when there was weakness in the opponent and then their team was bigger, Bayern, Barcelona, Real Madrid were better. They pounce and they scored three. They scored four sometimes. You know, that's the difference. That's how they post those huge goal totals. Darwin Nunez has that same eye for weakness, right? I don't think he scored against Benfica last season, but it doesn't matter. He scored, you know, he pummeled the weaker teams, and I think he's going to do that again. And Liverpool have so many games where they're just miles better than the opponent, right? And then they'll score a couple of goals, and then Salah will keep trying to score goals. But because he's a winger, he tries fancier things. It doesn't always come off. Darwin's a striker. He's going to be running beyond them, running beyond the last line every single time. We saw this with the Leipzig game, right? Four goals. He will just keep doing that. He'll score cheap, scrappy goals late in games. He won't care. And he'll easily get over 20 goals, for sure. For sure. But I'll tell you what else. My prediction is, right, Erling Haaland will break Mohamed Salah's 32-goal record, debut Premier League season record. He'll break it. He'll smash it, right? Because he's ridiculous. And not only is, obviously, he's got 20 goals in 21 games for Norway. He's got 86 and 89 for Borussia Dortmund, 29 and 27 for Salzburg. And who can forget, 27 in 25 in the Champions League. Like, so forget the Bundesliga attacks. My man's killing everybody in the Champions League. Like, I think City are the only team he's played and not scored against in Europe. And that's because he couldn't get the ball, right? So he's lethal. And now you put him in there. Like, everyone goes on the Community Shield. Everyone's got their jokes. And fair enough, make jokes about the guy. It's fine. He didn't play well. But he should have scored a hat-trick, right? He had three great chances to score in that game, right? And he wasn't playing well. And City missed three stick-on assists to him, passes that would have set him 1v1 with enough time to measure his shot and to score a goal, right? So that's three golden chances he missed himself, and then three stick-on assists that City missed to him. And that's his first game. That's against the best team he's going to face, and City didn't even play well. I don't think people really understand the utterly terrifying potential of Erling Haaland playing for Man City. Anybody opens up against City, they're going to get killed, right? And we know he can already score those tap-ins that City love to work and conjure out against weaker teams. All those goals that Sterling scored over the years, the title-winning goal that Gundogan scored, he's going to score all of them now. That's all going to be him. He's going to be near post, back post, running across those De Bruyne crosses, the low balls. Phil Foden's going to be fizzing low balls in. They get a left-back fizzing low balls in. He's going to be there, showing up every single time. Tap, 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 tap. He's going to score so many goals. It's ridiculous. Like, I don't want to say we're going to see the Messi-Ronaldo 40-goal, Lewandowski 40-goal-plus numbers, because I'm not sure that will happen in his first season, but he's absolutely going to go beyond 32, for sure. He's going to break a new. He's going to set records. He's one of the best strikers in the world, playing for one of the best teams in the world, and you can see already the terrifying potential of the combination. Yeah, Haaland's going to clean up.
I want to flick across, Kaya, and ask you about this rivalry that we're all really excited about with Haaland and Nunez. And looking at the numbers from last season, it is so, so, so tight between them. And City fans and Liverpool fans are going to have some fun rowing with each other about who is better. So I just want to throw some of the data at you based on 21-22. 3.76 shots for Haaland compared to 3.71 for Nunez. XG was 0.87 for Haaland, 0.81 for Nunez. And then goals, or average goals, for Haaland was 1.03 and Nunez 1.07. There's very, very little between them. It, hopefully, as Mo has predicted, it's going to be an absolute heavyweight punch for punch all the way through the season. How do you see this playing out? Who is going to be top dog at the end of the campaign in terms of that mini battle? They've both got the moniker of a big transfer fee and it being their first season. Who's going to be the kingpin between them two?
I'm going to basically copy what Mo said and go for Erling Haaland. I think he's going to be the better of the two in terms of goal scoring. But my reasoning for that isn't necessarily because I think the quality disparity is so huge. I just think the way Liverpool rotate their strikers means that he probably won't get as many minutes as Erling Haaland. I think that when Jota comes back to full fitness and when Firmino's there and Salah's obviously there, I think, and Luis Diaz, of course, can't forget about him. I think Liverpool rotate their front line a lot more than sort of Manchester City do in terms of the way they play centre forward. So I can't see Nunez playing every game in the way that I can see Haaland playing every game. So I think if I had to be sort of a betting man and gamble on that, that would be what I'd go for purely based on the numbers. So yeah, I think Erling Haaland obviously is a deadly finisher, and you know, as much as the Community Shield was amusing, I think, yeah, like Mo said, I think we'll all see the kind of striker he really is when he gets back into the Premier League and gets into the swing of things. I don't think he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who'll be too affected by it. He seems pretty confident in his own abilities, and I don't think that's going to change even if he's had a poor afternoon at Wembley.
I mean, the fact that he missed like chances early on and still was making those runs into space, and then at the end was still live enough to pounce on something. Like, he missed the shot, obviously the sitter right at the end that would have been a consolation for City. He missed it, but he was still there to have the shot. You know, he's still alive and awake even when a game is dead and gone. Like, he's terrifying. And apart from Julian Alvarez, all of City's other wingers now are creator first. Like, they sold Sterling, who was a goal scorer first, right? So now they've got Riyad Mahrez and Jack Grealish. I think they need another one, by the way. I think they need another winger, ideally, if you're Man City. I think they should have paid Cucurella for whatever that Brighton wanted. But anyway, Grealish and Mahrez are creators. They're not, I mean, they can score, but they're creators primarily, right? So I think that's what we're going to see a lot more of, is a lot of cutbacks for Haaland to score. He's just, the potential is terrifying. I don't think, what was the last thing? No Pep players won the Golden Boot, right? I think that's how it is. So I think Haaland will be the first Pep Guardiola striker to win the Golden Boot in the Premier League. I think absolutely, unquestionably, he's going to be the guy. Aguero's been unlucky on a couple of occasions, to be fair. But yeah, Haaland is ridiculous. He's a match made in heaven. He plays exactly the way City need a striker to play. Watch out England and watch out Europe.
I'm going to go for a bit more of a spread across on my prediction on this, because we can't forget about Mo. You or Mohamed Salah, because I just have this thing.
He's a bit better than I am.
Well, a bit. Well, at some things, he has his strengths and you have your strengths. But I still think he's in the race. I think signing the new contract is going to see a bit more zip about him. We know that he's the main man at Liverpool. He's going to continue to be the main man. Sadio Mane is gone. It's going to be a bit more weight on his shoulders. But he's just incredible at dealing with that pressure, dealing with the big game expectation. So my pick for this season is going to be that all of them are going to be incredible, and I'm going to go for a first ever Premier League season with three players getting over 25 goals, and that's going to be Salah, Haaland and Nunez. But I'm too much of a chicken to predict the Golden Boot. I'm going to go for Salah. I'm sticking with Salah. I think he's been incredible. I think the new guys, it's going to take them a little bit of time to bed in, and Salah knows everything. He knows it upside down, left to right, and he just scores goals for fun. So I'm going to go for three players over 25, but Salah to be top dog.
Meanwhile, Harry Kane and Henry Son are looking at us like, guys, hello, we exist, you know.
On the off chance that they're listening to the podcast, Harry, Son, I'm sorry, there's a couple of new sheriffs in town, and there's the original sheriff who I'm going with. Right, let's move on to the final couple of sections, and we're going to go for the Playmaker Award. Mo, all eyes on Kevin De Bruyne this season as he aims to break the 100 Premier League assist mark. He's currently got 86, and the big question that we're asking is, can he do it? He got 20 Premier League assists in 18-19, one of only two players to ever manage that in a single season, but he's not won the Playmaker Award since then, and he'd need to do better than the last two seasons. He's got 12-8 in the last two campaigns. In terms of chances being created, he was third last season, Trent Alexander-Arnold with 90 and Bruno Fernandes with 89. He does have a career high, which was unreal, 137 in 1920. Not good enough to break Mesut Ozil's chance creation record in 15-16, which was 146, including 19 Premier League assists. Kaya can keep that one in his pocket.
That would have been 20-plus, by the way, but Giroud forgot to score.
Don't bring that up.
He would have smashed that record. He had like 16 or something by Christmas, and then Giroud just forgot to score. Mesut Ozil propaganda right here, baby.
In terms of De Bruyne, Mo, 86 to get to 100. Yeah. He is incredible. He's now got Haaland in the team to be whipping them balls in that he loves to do. Can he break 100? And will he get himself a Playmaker Award this season?
I predict that Kevin De Bruyne will win the Playmaker Award and break the 100 assist barrier. He'll join the 100 assist. You're saying he's fallen off, right? Like, since 2019-20 in terms of assists?
I didn't say he's fallen off.
Listen, I wonder why. Could it be that Sergio Aguero has also, in that time, first fallen off and be the lesser club? Yeah, that's why. He's not. Who's he passing to, man? Jesus doesn't even play. Like, Jesus is the next best striker. He's not even passing to Jesus. Jesus barely plays, right? Look at the numbers, right? So the last two seasons, last two title wins for Man City, right? Bruno Fernandes is top Premier League, 184 chances created. 35 of those are big chances created, and then 18 assists, right? Trent Alexander-Arnold, 167 chances created, 32 of those are big chances, and then 19 assists, right? Kevin De Bruyne, 167 chances created, 35 of those are big chances, and 20 assists. By the way, he's played like about 1,000 or 2,000 less minutes than those other two. That's something to consider as well. If he stays fit the whole season, which again, that's not a guarantee with Kevin De Bruyne, you never know, right? If he stays fit, absolutely, he'll smash it because he's passing to Haaland, and not just Haaland, Julian Alvarez. You've got two lethal strikers now to be passing the ball to. The way he passes, the way he crosses as well, it's a perfect kind of fit for those two as well. With the through balls, he's great at. They're great at learning onto through balls. Again, he missed a stick on one assist to Haaland already in the Community Shield. And Alvarez, again, it was De Bruyne's great cross that set Alvarez's goal up. So Alvarez makes those kind of runs, those kind of little movements. He's going to clean up. He's going to absolutely... Trent will do well. Don't get me wrong. Trent will do well. But the thing is, Trent's already been passing to world-class forwards. So, like, how much better can he actually get? I think he'll do well. Darwin will help him. Darwin getting into Trent's crosses is going to be pretty lethal. Bruno Fernandes, look, the Man United player has won the Playmaker Award since Nani. And I don't think Bruno Fernandes is going to win the Playmaker Award, unfortunately. I would very much like him to, but again, United haven't bought him a striker to pass to. Martial's there. Martial's not consistent. And I'm Martial FC, but I don't think he's going to get enough goals that Bruno will get assists. Also, it's Ten Hag, so the system is going to split chances created. Eriksen is there now. Eriksen will take set pieces. I don't think Bruno will get the Playmaker Award. He'll still be very good, but... Yeah, I would say Bruno Fernandes is not going to do it. It's going to be Kevin De Bruyne. He's passing to one of the best strikers in the world now. Hasn't been doing that for a while. It's the numbers are going to go boom, 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 boom. It's going to be huge. It's going to be brutal. I don't know how expensive he is, but put him in your FPL teams. And maybe he's too expensive.
Possibly. Right, we're going to move on to the final section, which is the winner, or our prediction for the winner of the PFA Player of the Year. Now, we talked about debut seasons for players coming into the Premier League in terms of the Golden Boot before Kaya, but interestingly, the only player to win the PFA Player of the Year in their first season in the Premier League is Ruud van Nistelrooy way back when. Mohamed Salah, on his return to English football, won it with Liverpool. It's an exclusive club to break into, and we've kind of tried to put together a how-to, like an IKEA set of how to win the PFA Player of the Year. And basically, looking at the last five seasons, your name needs to either be Kevin De Bruyne or Mohamed Salah, because that's just the way it's been. It's been a Liverpool or a City player that have won the last five. You've got to go all the way back to 2012-13 to Gareth Bale to be a player to win it and not finish inside the top two. And these final stats, they do look to be heading in one direction. And these variables, they are a realistic way of winning it. There's lots of other interesting variables thrown in. Don't be an England international. Wayne Rooney was the last one to win it in 2010. And interestingly, if you're a Chelsea, quote, flop, you've got a great chance when you look at Salah and De Bruyne. They're probably facing off. They're the favourites to win it. Kevin De Bruyne is going to be the first player to win three. That would be another record for him this season. But Salah, as I said with the Golden Boot, he'll be right in there as well.
Yeah, I think Manchester City are going to win the Premier League, and therefore I think Kevin De Bruyne will be crowned PFA Player of the Year. That's generally how it goes, isn't it? It's the team who, I know you've got your how-to kit. Another sort of thing to go on that is probably be in the team that wins the Premier League. That probably helps you along the way, I think. It will be probably between those two. We've mentioned all the new guys on the block and how they could impact things. And we've spoken about how Spurs have lots of good players and how Arsenal have lots of good players and Chelsea have lots of good players. But it will be between Man City and Liverpool, and it will most likely be Kevin De Bruyne for me. I just think that, like Mo say, with Erling Haaland in front of him, he's going to now be just getting so many much more assists. And also some of the passes we're going to see him making with Erling Haaland's movement. Just some of those passes that he's just no one else is going to be able to see, and we'll just... I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And I'd back Kevin De Bruyne to be player of the season.
I would agree with that. I think De Bruyne's going to do it. Because I think Salah, I think he's the other rival, but Salah's going to... Darwin will muddy the waters for Salah in terms of who's the top dog in that team. I think Darwin will take goals away from Salah. Salah will become more of a playmaker. But he's not known for being a playmaker. So the fact that he scores less goals and creates more goals, well, people will think, oh, he's not playing that well, when he actually is. Whereas De Bruyne is just it's just a chance creator, right? And he's going to have just the most amazing season passing to Erling Haaland. So, and he's the best player, the most recognised player on the best team. Should have won it last year, got robbed of the three-peat. So it's him v Salah for the third time. First one to win it three times. I think he'll win it. I think De Bruyne will take it. I agree. But shout out to Harry Kane, who I feel is going to have a very good season, because he kind of sulked for like the first third of last season and then didn't really play very well until mid-Christmas. But that's not going to happen this year. I think he's going to have a very, very good season. The only worry is, of course, is how much is he going to break himself at the World Cup?
Just before we wrap up, Mo, I'm going to throw it back across to you. Any tips for young player? Michael Olise is gathering ground at Crystal Palace. Just looking at his key statistic from last season. Highest expected assist per 90 in 21-22, based on playing over 900 minutes. Trent Alexander-Arnold and Kevin De Bruyne are above him, but we're not going to talk about them again. He's the next one down. He's been massively impressive for Palace, but there's some really exciting options in terms of young player this season. Who's your call for that?
Well, I love Olise, and I would love to say him, but I worry about how much Conor Gallagher's absence is going to affect Crystal Palace. I hope that not that much, and I hope, because I love Olise. I've been a big fan. I wanted Barcelona to sign him when it looked like they were going to lose Dembele, because I think as a creative winger, I think his potential is literally as high as you want to go in football. Genuinely, I think. Any Champions League, international, and everything. I think he's fantastic, potentially. He's only 20 years old. Phil Foden's the best young player in the Premier League, and he's going to be... But the thing is, because they've changed the rules now, he's too old. He's 22 years old, so you have to be 21 or under on July the 1st, right, before the season starts. So... there's only two names that, in my mind, that are going to be on for this, right? One is Bukayo Saka, who is somehow still 20 years old. Very, very good player. I don't know if you've heard of him. And exceptional footballer, wonderful footballer, talismanic almost in a weird way for Arsenal when they were rubbish. And now they're good. I think he'll really fit in and become sort of like great. Him and Jesus, he's great. But here's a weird rogue shout. Erling Haaland was 21 years old on the 1st of July this year. He turned 22 2 weeks later. I mean, it would be very strange, but if Kevin De Bruyne, if you're City and you want him to win, you put De Bruyne up for the big one, you put Haaland up for the little one, he's technically eligible.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Erling Haaland to win Young Player of the Year? That's my shout. Erling Haaland to win Young Player of the Year. Which sounds ridiculous. And sorry, Bukayo, because you've been robbed yet again. But he'll still be eligible next year, Saka will. So that next year will finally be Saka.
That's an annoyingly good shout.
This year.
Yeah, possibly. And I think it'll be the first time this season that Erling Haaland and put it into the little one will be connected in the same sentence. So congratulations on that one. Right, we're going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. We're back in business for the 2022-23 campaign. The big kickoff this weekend. We're all looking forward to it. So Mo, Kaya, thank you for your time, for your predictions, for your insight as always.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Cheers, guys. Wonderful stuff. As always, don't forget to hit subscribe. You can get access to a brand new show as soon as it is ready to roll. Check us out on social media at Squawker. There's loads of stuff in and around the start of the season. The guys have been working super, super hard in the last few weeks. So don't forget to check that out, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.